From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. In December, Tom Waits, the singer-songwriter, will turn 57. Over the years, he's given up whiskey for family life and a productive songwriting partnership with his wife, Kathleen Brennan. But the flavor of the whiskey is still in the voice, and the lyrics still invoke the poets of the Beat Generation.
To my daddy told me, looking back, the best friend you have is a railroad track. So when I was 13, I said I'm rolling my own, and I'm leaving Missouri, and I'm never coming home.
This is Bottom of the World. It's one of 54 songs on a new 3-CD album from Tom Waits called Orphans. There are some old songs, some new songs, mostly songs by Waits and Brennan, but plenty of covers too. Tom Waits has written a lot for the movies, and we talked about that, especially a song for an Academy Award-winning animated short called Bunny. The movie's about a rabbit, a moth, and the afterlife. The song he wrote for it is called Bend Down the Branches, and it doesn't mention any of those subjects.
I don't know what connection the song had, but it worked. You know, sometimes it comes in at a right angle. So if it's too on the money, sometimes people won't pay any attention. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, songs for movies, you know, it's usually they're out of money and they're out of time and they're out of patience. And they usually have a problem with the film they want you to fix.
You mean the song is supposed to...
The song is supposed
to fix their problem. I see.
and they don't have a lot of money, and they want it by the weekend. That's always what happens. So,
but at that time, do you sit down and try to write to order, or do you look through the drawer and see what have we written already that might conceivably be adapted and fit that, something unpublished, say?
I mean, do we need fresh material?
Yeah,
or
well,
do you have something in stock?
Do you have a drawer full of stuff that's almost ready to go, but it's not quite finished?
Well, my feeling, if you got a song left over from a project, I usually cut it up and use it for bait.
So. The sky's as deep as it can be. Bend down the branches, close your eyes and you will see. Bend down the branches, you're like a willow, once you are gold, we're made for bending, even beauty. Not so steep, bend down the branches, close your eyes and go to sleep, bend down the branches.
This song that comes on right after Bend Down the Branches, You Can Never Hold Back Spring.
All right.
You sound to me like Louis Armstrong.
You can never hold back spring. You can be sure I will never stop believing. The blushing rose, it will climb. Spring ahead or fall behind. The same dream every time. Baby, you can never hold back spring.
That was a song for Roberto Benigni, who did a movie called The Tiger in the Snow about the Iraq War. And the movie was kind of built around the song. It played several times during the movie.
Had you actually been able to see the movie when you wrote the song, or to read the screenplay?
No, just had to write a good song.
Close your eyes, open your heart to
you hope when there's that you dock the whole thing, it's going to match up.
You know? But you said something interesting before about writing music for movies, which is if it's too literally on what the movie is about, it can be too much. That cannot work. It has to be elusive in some way, or come at it from right angle, and you can get it.
Well, it's like if two people know the same things, one of you is unnecessary. And I think a song is kind of a movie for the ears. So if it's just underscoring and restating what you're already experiencing visually, I think you just kind of bat it away like a fly, unless it has some kind of nourishment from another dimension. So that's what you try to do with a song.
Your rendition of Hi Ho, Hi Ho, It's Off to Work We Go. Never have the Seven Dwarfs seemed more miserable to me, more utterly exploited than in the way you would have them sing about mining for diamonds and rubies.
Actually, Disney tried to sue us after the record came out because they said, "Man, you changed all the words."
No, those are the. I've gone back and looked at the lyrics, and those
They're
are the lyrics.
Same.
Yeah, those are the lyrics. Actually,
exactly the same.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was kind of ironic. And then
I'm not surprised they tried to sue you, though, just the same, because you did sort of strip the song of its cheery, whimsical quality.
I guess you could say that and be on the money. Yeah, but. Sometimes that's what a song needs in order to survive the time that it was born in. I thought it worked. And the other thing I find interesting is that when I'm listening to it, it doesn't sound like I'm saying we dig in the mine. It sounds like we're digging in our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And that even takes on another quality to it. We dig in our minds all day long. Dig, 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 that's what we like to do. Ain't no trick to get rich quick if you dig, dig, dig with a shovel and a pick. You know, that we are all digging in our minds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that was a hoot.
Yeah, yes, I bet it was. Just lacks a certain cavalier quality to the hi-ho, hi-ho.
Yeah,
part.
Yeah, it took the skip out of their step.
Was there a particular song or album of songs or singer whom you heard as a teenager or even younger, and you heard that and you said, having heard that, I want to write songs?
Well, sure. There's always that moment where you say, oh, maybe I can do this. Well, of course, when I was a teenager, you know, I was listening to James Brown and Bobby Blue Bland and Jimmy Witherspoon and Bob Dylan and Ray Charles and I think most singers, when they start out, are doing really bad impersonations of other singers that they admire. You kind of evolve into your voice, or maybe your voice is out there waiting for you to grow up. Then it meets you. I don't know. I mean, what about your voice? You must have started out like a singer, you know?
Being very imitative.
Yeah.
As a young, and like many young people in radio, always wanting to sound older than I was.
Yeah.
And I'm now old enough to want to sound a little younger than I am.
See, I went the same way. I wanted to sound like an old man when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Until I became an old man.
Yeah, who wants to sound like that?
But yeah, that's interesting.
Because Ray Charles and Bob Dylan were both people who demonstrated that you could be a great American singer, I guess Louis Armstrong as well, and not be a velvety crooner. There was a lot of room for somebody whose voice had a lot of rough edges to it.
Yeah, right.
And you certainly...
I pushed it to the limit.
Pushed it to the limit, yes.
But I try to make different kinds of characters out of my voice. You know, I have a falsetto, and I try to sound like a cherry bomb and a clown and an old-fashioned crooner.
And sometimes you'll actually purposely Well, purposely degrade the quality of your in the recording. I mean,
that's the fun.
You'll go for distortion. You'll go for distortion.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's like it's an instrument, you know. And after a while, you learn there's different stuff you can do with it.
So I left Montana.
The beat poets were very influential for you, very important for you, I guess.
Yeah, they were like father figures, I think, for me, because you have to have someone you could really look up to, and they were like pirates, real buccaneers. They struck out on their own, made names for themselves. And
Kerouac, Ginsberg, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, was he somebody?
Oh, yeah, Ferlinghetti, no question about that.
Were you a big fan of Coney Island of the Mind?
Yeah, I remember that book very. I got it signed when I was teenager. I took the train to San Francisco and went to the bookstore and, went to a bar nearby and where I heard that he hung out and gave it to the bartender and said, well, if he comes in here, have him sign it for me, will you? And he did. Yeah, that's great, great pieces and feels very current in spite of the fact that it's probably 50 years old now.
So how do you deal with the idea that you start off determined to be from the outside and to be different and to be avant-garde, and you're at serious risk of being, Tom Waits pop culture superstar here.
You need a scandal, I guess, every now and then, or you got to just disappear for a while. I try to keep my audience a little hungry, Don't feed the dolphins, Robert. Next time you go out, they'll poke a hole in your boat. don't need to be fed every day.
No.
That's the thing about your audience.
Well, you've given them quite a meal this time, though.
Yeah, I'm going to have to really cut back from here on in.
Okay.
This is the last they're going to hear from me for a long time.
Well, Tom Waits, thank you very much for talking with us.
Good talking with you, Robert.
Hope it's not the last time we hear from you.
Oh, no, it won't be.
Tom Waits' new 3-CD album is called Orphans, and there are more selections at our website, npr.org.